In this next episode of the Football Mental Health Alliance podcast, I meet Ross Preston, the founder of Challenger Mindset. In this episode, we discuss psychology, resilience and confidence in grassroots football. Ross has worked with the likes of Manchester United Academy and the Rugby Football League match officials, and also works alongside young people in education on a continual basis. We cover many facets of sports psychology. We cover what it is and why it's crucial for footballers at all levels, particularly grassroots, what resilience means in a football context, how parents and caregivers can support the development of resilience in young footballers, and quick wins that coaches or parents can implement to boost player confidence in the short term. Thank you, Ross.
Hi, Ross. Right, so really appreciate you joining us on the podcast. Really excited about this. We'll get straight into it. I'll let you explain who you are. So could you tell us about Challenger Mindset and how it aims to empower athletes and performers?
Yeah. So first of all, Danny, thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it. It's actually my first podcast, so hopefully I can do you proud. So I'm Ross. I'm a mental performance coach. I'm currently training on what's called the CPAR pathway to become a fully qualified sport and exercise psychologist. And so through that, I've recently opened up my own sports psychology consultancy called Challenger Mindset, with the aim of empowering athletes and essentially equipping them with the insight and the knowledge and the tools to kind of manage their own mind, manage the challenges that sport throws at them, and to enable them to take as much control as possible over their own performance, focus on the right things in and out of sport that are going to help them to thrive, rather than be held back by lacking in certain areas of their mental game. And so, that's essentially a quick summary of my business and what I'm doing at the moment.
Brilliant. Was there anything that sort of led you to think this is what's needed? This is what I need to do. Did you see a gap? You know, what was the catalyst for Challenger Mindset?
I think a mixture of things. You know, my personal kind of goals and things, and I quite like the idea of having my own consultancy and bringing clients in, having control of my own time and kind of being my own boss, essentially, as well as the fact that I love that one-to-one consultancy. I love developing those relationships with the performers and the athletes, and going on that journey with them where we start off with, you know, often it is an issue, but it doesn't have to be, starting off with a goal that they want to achieve and working through that with them and supporting that process of development and again them gaining insight, and just the little wins along the way are so gratifying for me and for the client. Yeah. And it's just really motivating to carry on. It's not the easiest industry to be in, but it's really, really rewarding, and that was the thing for me. I'm really passionate about sports psychology, and I know this is the career that I want to take, and I love helping people as well, and sport was just kind of my area of interest that I wanted to help people in.
So when you say it's not an easy industry to work in, what can you just like, could you define that to a layman like myself? What makes it difficult?
Yeah, of course. I think we've come on a long way in terms of people's buy-in to sports psychology. And obviously, kind of, if you look at it 20 years ago, there was still a lot of skepticism around the benefits, or is it helpful? You know, are sports psychologists valuable? Whereas now, I think with the amount of players that are coming out and saying, yeah, I've worked with a sports psychologist, you know, it's really benefited me, so what? That stigma against it has kind of gone down. I think, you know, there's obviously the Dele Alli thing. Ben Chilwell, I think, came out. Tyrone Mings. A lot of high-profile players have now said they're working with a sports psychologist. It's well documented now. And I think that awareness and understanding of sports psychology being important and how important the mental game is has really risen. I think the step that we need to take now is to make it more accepted and more bought into is kind of how do we actually take that knowledge and implement it into training the same way as we would with strength and conditioning, you know, getting players fitter, getting players healthier in their diet. Everyone knows at a basic level how to do that, whereas I feel as though less people know how to implement the mental training. And that makes it sometimes difficult to work in and get that buy-in as easy as a nutritionist or a strength and conditioning coach might do.
I think like I totally, you know, from in my experience, totally get where you're coming from with that. You know, for me, complete nonsense not to have, you know, an element of psychological training, mental health training in any, you know, organization or entity or industry. But in football or sport, where, you know, the majority of the game is played upstairs, isn't it, in your head, not in your feet. And I've never understood why teams and the sport has not embraced that earlier on. But then talking about when you talked about strength and conditioning training and nutritional training, that's probably only come in the last 10, 15 years, hasn't it? You know, you look, I listen to podcasts from ex-pros where, you know, your Roy Keane's example where they'd play, or Paul McGrath back in the day, there'd be, and some Arsenal players, you know, Tony Adams, who's had well-documented battles, Ray Parlour, Paul Merson, you know, they were out drinking straight after training, Thursday night club, I think they called it. And that was when Arsene Wenger were arrived, and, you know, he changed a lot of that, didn't he? So I think that, you know, I hear what you're saying about now the sport is seeing the value of, you know, psychological profiling, training, et cetera, et cetera. So I think people like yourself that are coming in early are in a great position to lead that conversation and educate. And that's, for me, what it's about, educating the sport and the decision makers within the sport that at all levels, this should be the norm. So I totally get you. So moving on from that then, can you explain what sports psychology is and why it's crucial for footballers at all levels, particularly, you know, grassroots level, where people might think that it's not important?
So, I mean, kind of sports psychology is the use of psychological knowledge and skills to benefit the performance and the well-being of athletes. So I like to think of it, you know, there's different approaches within the domain of sports psychology. So it's hard to kind of nutshell it into one answer. But for me, it's about learning to manage your mind, manage those difficult thoughts, manage those difficult emotions that football, in this example, will throw up. Inevitably it's going to happen. There are so many challenges and setbacks and demands of football that are going to challenge you mentally. And it's about learning the skills and having the knowledge of how to manage that, how to refocus on what you're doing in that moment, what you need to do to perform well. And then that enables you to perform those actions and reach your potential or play to your potential. And alongside that, looking at a well-being aspect, can you then go away from the game and not almost get caught up in what happened yesterday in a match? You know, can you then go back and do what's important in school, what's important in day-to-day life, without being in your own head about, oh, I made that mistake yesterday, I missed that chance yesterday? And that is the kind of the well-being aspect of, as well, is your identity being consumed by football, or is it just one part of it? And do you have a healthy balance of all the other aspects?
So how, as a coach or as a parent and a carer of someone that, you know, plays football, what sort of signs could I be looking out for that, you know, my son, daughter, one of my players is experiencing some, is psychological stress the correct one, a term to use?
Yeah, that's fine. So yes, stress, or I guess an issue psychologically, you know, whether, and obviously there's different issues with different signs, but I guess key things to listen and look out for are, you know, how is that young player talking about themselves as a player? You know, are they showing quite almost like rigid beliefs or inflexible beliefs about themselves? You know, I'm never going to, if they're maybe pursuing a career through academy or pursuing to get into an academy, you know, I'm never going to make it, you know, I'm rubbish, I'm never going to make it, you know, that rigid belief that it's never going to happen. They're holding it strongly. You know, what are their expectations of themselves? Are they realistic, or are they really high, and is that impacting on their mental health and confidence and things like that? You know, we can also look at behavior. Are they being their usual self, or have they been maybe become a bit withdrawn? Are they now suddenly kind of hiding in training and in games, whereas they're usually quite actively looking for the ball, and wanting to get on the ball and do things? Are they taking those risks that they usually would, or are they almost playing within themselves? And you know, we'd love it if these issues kind of slapped us in the face, but often they don't. It's picking up on those kind of subtle, more subtle cues and things in that you can notice that there's difference maybe from last week to this week. And I think, yeah, it's kind of just those subtle things that change, that are the first step to kind of checking in with that player and assessing, okay, is something going on here? And also as well, considering the bigger picture, okay, you know, they might be bringing something from school onto the pitch that's affecting their focus or something like that. You know, they may be thinking about the fact that they're getting bullied. They may be thinking about the fact that they're not doing too well in their exams at the minute. You know, is something going on at home? And that can all be brought onto the pitch. You have to view the whole picture, not just what's going on in football, what's going on in training, because there are so many factors that can impact on that. So that's for me, yeah, it's just assessing kind of language, body language as well, what we can see, behaviour, and then what's going on around them and in their environment that could be impacting on these factors that ultimately impacts performance and well-being.
You used a good term there, check-in. Could you give us some examples of how maybe, if you're looking from the player, so a player would generally have, like, at any level, the coaching staff and the family. Could you give us some examples of how, as a coach, you can check in with your players, and as a parent, carer, guardian, family member, you could check in with your son, daughter, you know, the person you're looking after, etc.
Yeah. I think with the coaches, obviously, they're going to be probably confined to time at training, time in matches. So, you know, probably training is the best place to do it, because there's not that kind of significance of they've got to play and focus on the game. So, you know, it can be simply a case of whilst the drill's going on, pulling them off out of the drill quickly and just having, you know, 2 minutes just to check in, you know, are you okay? I've noticed that, you know, this week you're not asking for the ball or as much, or you're a bit quiet this week. You know, it doesn't have to be accusatory. You know, is your confidence low at the minute? Yeah. Just a simple question. And they may or may not divulge that information at that point, but it's just that case of letting them know you are there. And if you keep checking in and letting them know that you're invested in their well-being, then eventually they will feel safe enough to tell you. Ideally, you know, you want that to be on the first time, but it might take a couple of checks. So I think that's one easy way, you know. And then if there's a drill going on as well, they don't feel like they're getting singled out, the players aren't all going to be watching them, all coaches chatting to him, what's up with him, you know, they might think that he's just talking about the drill or something. So it makes that player feel a bit less comfortable, a bit less watched, which can help that process of them actually, you know, confiding in the coach. In terms of parents, obviously there's a lot more opportunity to chat with the players and the kid there. I think the car journey, you know, to and from games is a great opportunity to check in with them. You know, just a simple question: how did you think you played today? You know, not you played this way or you played that way. How do you think you played today? And then it hands the responsibility over to them to assess how they did, you know, assess how they're feeling about it. And then it helps with that sense making, that awareness of, oh, okay, actually, I felt like I didn't do too well today. That made me feel frustrated. And it helps with that, gaining that emotional understanding and things like that that are so vital to develop at this age. And so I think that, yeah, like the car journey is a great opportunity for that. But again, it's making the player feel safe, or your child feel safe to confide that into you. So you can almost model that behavior to them to make them feel safe to do that. You know, I understand you might be feeling a bit frustrated after today. I remember when I made a mistake in a game, when I missed a penalty in a game, I felt so frustrated, you know, but I got through it and I felt okay, you know, after a week or so when I got the chance to make up for it in the next game. And it's that idea that you're normalizing that experience for them and they know it's okay to feel that way. Because it might be the first time they've missed a penalty or they've gone through that setback or they felt that emotion. And so, for parents, I think, grabbing the chances to normalize those feelings and those experiences is so important.
I think a good word, you know, from my perspective that you used there was accusatory. And I think, you know, if you come in to anyone with an accusatory tone or language, the barriers are going to go up straight away, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, so by, you know, using the open questions, and I think, I don't know what you think, but I've seen that if you use those open questions, and if, you know, that player is not in a position or headspace to talk about it, don't push it. It would be, you know, in my experience, you just let them go. You know, the more you push, the more you're going to get pushed back at you. And I think that it's trying to not let it, you know, let them lead the conversation. If they don't want to go down that path, fine, there'll be another time to talk about it. And I think, like what you say, just keeping talking to them from a parental or guardian perspective and a coach perspective is just letting them know that the door is always open and you know, it's there for them to talk if they want to. So yeah, fantastic advice, Ross. So resilience is often talked about as an essential mental skill for athletes. Can you break down what resilience means in a football context?
Yeah, of course. So resilience is basically the quality of experiencing adversity, or as you mentioned before, that word, a stressor, and then essentially going through the process of either being able to withstand that and having the quality to withstand that and carry on performing and acting in the way that you were before. Or players might enter a bit of a dip where they experience some of those psychological issues, but then they're able to recover and respond effectively to then refocus and perform well again. So in the context of football, if we give a football example, that may be, for example, a striker. Let's take a striker. They miss a penalty. So a resilience response there would be to either straight away they're refocused. They probably will have those thoughts going on, oh, I can't believe you just missed that, or I should have scored that. But they're able to refocus immediately. They're pressing the defenders straight away. 2 minutes later, they're still focused on what they can do to essentially influence the game. They make a great run, get played through, and they slot away the chance. And that response is obviously a very, very positive response to adversity. On the flip side, you know, you can go into that almost that dip a bit with resilience, where, you know, they missed a penalty, maybe it's late in the game finishes, they lose 1-0. There's that sense of, oh, I've cost us the game. But then they're able to kind of interpret in the head that, okay, there was other factors that contributed to us losing that game. You know, my missed penalty was obviously a mistake on my part, but I can now refocus on training this week. I'll come back next week better. They're focused in training, and then they're able to perform in the way they want it in the next game. And so it's basically being able to get back on track essentially as soon as possible, despite that adversity and that, or that mistake happening to them, that setback. And that's not to say that those they won't feel, you know, difficult thoughts and emotions about that experience, but it's the fact that they're able to refocus on doing what's important to recover from it.
I think, like, Stephen Corker, who's ex-Tottenham, Liverpool, Spurs, Southampton, QPR, played for England in 2012. I recently listened to a podcast he said, and he's like I say, he's an ambassador for The Vault, a fantastic guy. And he said, just picking up on what you said there, Ross, he said that if I made a mistake in the 10th minute, for example, it stayed with me all game. All game, it was with me. And I think from like a playing perspective, you know, I never played at a good level or anything, but I played football. And whenever I made a mistake, for me, I always felt like I'd also let my team down as well. You know, so I think the weight of you've let yourself down, I'm not saying that's correct, but that's the feeling that you might have. Yeah. And then also the added feeling of I've let my team down. And I think, I don't know about yourself, but if you look at the two ends of the pitch, the closer you are to the goal, sometimes the more influence you have in the game. So if you're a keeper, generally you make a mistake, you know, it results in a goal. As a defender, you make a mistake closer to your own goal, it could result in a chance for a goal for the opposition. And as a striker, you know, you miss a few chances. Again, you could lose 1-0 and that striker could have had three good chances. So I think there maybe the psychological aspect of I've let the team down as well, you know, and then looking at a broader level when you move into the professional game, you've also let tens of thousands of people down in the stand, which is not the case. But would that be a fair assessment of, you know, a thing that could be going through a player's mind?
Yeah, and I think what's really important is what you mentioned about Stephen Corker saying that, you know, the mistake would stay in his mind for the rest of the game. That's something to emphasise, I think, really, you know. Some people may believe that they can pick out the mistake and just throw it away, but it's completely normal to make a mistake and for that to be running through your mind for the rest of the game, because that's what our mind does. But you know, our mind's trying to protect us; it wants us to get out of that potential stressful situation. What we need to do is learn the skills to let that thought be there, let that worry be there about that mistake, but still be able to focus on what matters in the match. What are my responsibilities? How do I perform my actions in this game to fulfill my role in my position and help the team, you know, achieve their goal?
Yeah.
And so it's not a sense of that we have to get rid of difficult thoughts and feelings. It's a sense of learning to let them be there without them contributing us to and making more mistakes later in the game. And so, yeah, you know, that element of kind of letting the team down, there's so many factors that come into making a mistake. It's a big one. And it's important, again, I think, a foundational level for all players to have, at any level, to have the ability to manage those thoughts and feelings, those worries that they might be having mid-game and after in the game as well, because that ultimately can be taken into the next day at school, into the week. You know, I remember when I used to play, if I had again, not at any great level at all, you know, it's just Sunday league grassroots. But I'd be going into school, you know, maybe I'd made a mistake on that the day before on Sunday. You get a bit of banter from your mates about it, which is all, you know, all good fun. But I'd, you know, I'd beat myself up about it because I'd let my friends down who were in my team. And, you know, to some people that might not seem significant because it's just Sunday league, but to us it is significant, and to every kid it's significant. You know, they look forward to a Sunday or a Saturday all week. They all want to win for each other, and if you're the one that makes the mistake and lets the team down and you feel like you've let yourself down, it can be really difficult. And it, you know, just because it's not academy or professional level doesn't mean that it's not going to impact that person's well-being.
Totally. I remember when I played, standard Sunday league. And when we transitioned from junior, you know, kids football, so maybe under 16s, we then went into the open age, to the adult section. So we went from under 16s into adult football. And the first game we had a friendly, I made a mistake, led to a goal, and I were devastated. And I went home and got in the bath after the game and cried in the bath. You know, and I look back now and you know, obviously, if you knew then what you know now, we'd all be in completely different situations, and that's not the case. But, you know, I were the same. You know, I remember crying in the bath about this mistake that I made. I had a crap game, and it was all because I put myself under so much pressure because it was the first game and I was stressed, and it meant so much to me because football back then was my life. I lived for the weekend to play football. Yeah, so going back to then, so, you know, we've said about mistakes and not trying to get rid of them, but live with them through the game. Mm. What exercises or practices can grassroots coaches use to build resilience in their players based on what we've just spoke about? If you make a mistake, how can we help them move on from it?
It's not easy, but I think the focus for a coach and some things to consider should be, what environment are they creating? we've got this thing called a facilitative environment for resilience. So we can just call it a pro-resilience environment here in simpler terms. And essentially what we want is, and what's been found, is that resilience is developed through having high support and high challenge. So there's that opportunity for, well, there's challenge. So there's an opportunity for setbacks, demand, failure even to occur. But there's also that balance of high support there, where players can fail safely, essentially. Yeah. So they're not entering that adversity and they're just left to kind of dwell on it, essentially. And so what we want, the features would be, you know, provide kind of incorporating healthy competition into training, you know, whereby everyone's on the same page. We all know why we're challenging ourselves. We're all trying to achieve the same goal. So it can be useful as a team to sit down and go, what do we want to do this season? Even at grassroots level, what do we want to achieve? Do we just want to enjoy the season? Do we want to improve in a certain way? Everyone on the same page, and get everyone with that collective sense of supporting each other. So when those adversities do occur in training, no one's on each other's back. It's not unhealthy in that way. Everyone's supporting each other through that adversity, and that helps players understand that mistakes and adversity is an opportunity to grow and respond well, which is underpins obviously resilience.
Yeah.
Also, you know, I think that opportunity to fail safely is so key, you know, because we know that players need to be allowed to take risks, because if they're allowed to take risks, they can try new things, they can be creative, and that's where, again, development occurs. But too often players are jumped on by teammates and coaches as well for trying something. It ends up in a mistake, and, you know, they can't fail safely, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's not to say players, you know, centre back should be trying cruise turns in the middle of the box. You know, it's about sensible risks.
Yeah.
But encouraging those sensible risks and seeing them as a chance to develop is really key for creating that environment where players are challenged but also supported. And I think if we can emphasise that through that, and the message needs to be that, you know, this adversity and these mistakes can help you learn. Players become more comfortable with making mistakes and being in these situations where they might not feel good at the time, but they'll see eventually that it's positive.
Yeah.
I read a quote that I loved about this, actually. It's in terms of this type of environment. It was trouble the comfortable and comfort the troubled. So you kind of bring the troubled down to this level of supported, and bring the comfortable up to this level of challenged. And you've got this nice level of challenge and supported, which helps develop that resilience in the environment.
Just say that again.
So it's trouble the comfortable and comfort the troubled.
So as in players, so yeah. if they're playing within their comfort zone, put a bit more, not pressure on them, but give them more challenges.
Yeah, essentially. Are they too comfortable? Are they bored, essentially? Yeah. You know, and that stunting that development because they're bored. They're not being challenged enough. They're in that kind of easy zone and that's why players maybe sometimes get moved up age groups and things like that, to provide that additional challenge. And then the troubled would be the players that maybe don't feel as though they are supported enough or supported healthily, and bringing them down into that level of support where that matches the challenge they're meeting, and facilitates that resilience being developed.
Love that. Just say it for us one more time, that phrase.
Trouble the comfortable and comfort the troubled.
Fantastic. And
the guy who said it, I can't remember his name.
We'll Google it and see. But that's brilliant. And that's like life. That's like life, isn't it? You know, in a work setting, in a school, college, university setting, it fits into life, that. But you know, I think for me, life mirrors football. It does, really. Yeah. You know, it is, you know, and I think that's why it's so emotive, football, because it mirrors life, and life mirrors football. And people that maybe don't understand football will think that's ridiculous phrase, but anyone that understands football, you know, it fits, doesn't it? So we've spoke about, you know, how we could identify players and signs from players that maybe they are struggling with low confidence. How can low confidence be linked to their mental health?
I think, you know, what you kind of see with low confidence is those rigid beliefs, as we spoke about before, often very self-critical, And if we're obviously talking in the context of sport, you know, that would be kind of sport confidence, their belief in their ability to play their sport well, to perform well in games, in football. And this, it's quite similar when we look at kind of mental health symptoms. It just becomes more about their beliefs about themselves as a person. Mm-hmm. You know, I am, instead of, you know, I am worthless as a footballer, I am worthless as a person. And, you know, it kind of starts drifting in. It can spill over, I think, into other areas of their life. And that's where it becomes more problematic. Because, yeah, those worries and their concept of themselves becomes, it starts to kind of define them in their in their head. Also, you know, it can start impacting their view of the future. You know, okay, I don't think I'm going to make it in academy football. I'm not going to make it anywhere in life now.
And
it's like that, almost like catastrophizing. And that kind of end of the world thinking that happens when you're young, because it does feel like the end of the world often when when you go through those setbacks at that age. You've not experienced them before, you know, maybe none of your friends have gone through a similar experience, so it's tough to see where someone, you know, an example of someone who's gone through it successfully. Maybe you've not heard your parents talk about how they went through setbacks and came out the other side, and you just feel like, oh my god, you know, this is the worst thing ever, what am I going to do? And yeah, so it's kind of, I feel like the low confidence in football, it's kind of a mini version of what can spill out into wider mental health issues. And as you say, sport is kind of a mini version of life.
Yeah.
And when there's a lot of significance placed on football, especially if you're pursuing it as a career, you know, going into academies and things like that, it does form a big part of your identity. And if that's taken away, or if that's not going the way you want it to, then you are going to form these perceptions of yourself. And it's really important to educate parents, coaches and players around that, what that might look like and how to manage it.
I speak to my son about fear and mistakes all the time, you know, certainly, you know, I try and use football as a metaphor for life with him.
Yeah.
And I'll say to him, I'll say, look, Jude, I say, you know, I get nervous. I get nervous every day going into work. I know I've got so much to do and so much to build and things to achieve and hurdles to overcome. You know, I get nervous. I think sometimes my son looks at me as if I'm this, you know, indestructible Iron 100%. Man or Superman. And I said, Jude, I get nervous every day. And I said, do you know what as well? Do you know why I know what I know? It's because I make mistakes every day. Yeah. I make mistakes every day.
Mm.
I try, though, to not make the same mistake again. Yeah. So I don't beat myself up if I make a mistake. But I then try as hard as I possibly can to not make that mistake again. And that's the only way you learn, isn't it?
Yeah,
mistakes. It's the only way anyone learns.
The ironic thing is that, you know, these players are probably, you know, you talk about like fear, they're feeling fear or whatever it might be, anxiety or anything, any emotion. And they're probably standing on the training ground thinking, I'm the only one here that's feeling this way. When actually, especially in, you know, the higher up you get, there's probably 90% of the team are feeling that.
Yeah.
But it's a case of they're unaware of it and they're unaware that it's normal. You know, there's a lot of emphasis placed on enjoyment, which is rightfully so.
Yeah.
But enjoyment's not the only emotion or feeling that you're going to experience in football. And we need to normalise doubt, uncertainty, stress, fear as being all part of the process. If you want to play sport, if you want to play football at a competitive level, it's all part of it. And that's why I think that the education around how to manage it is so important, because it is inevitable that they're going to experience it. And some players will be able to manage it more naturally than others. And that's the key, getting everyone to like a baseline level, I think, that they're able to handle those challenges. And then they have those skills to take into whatever journey and path they take on in life.
I think, like you say, though, when you said about, you know, a player thinking, I must be the only one that's feeling like this, that is just like every human being on the planet, isn't it? You know, we all think, oh, I'm the only one that gets worried about this, or I'm the only one that's nervous about this, or I'm the only one that experiences fear around this situation. And we're all human. We all have those emotions, don't we? I think that those of us that learn to understand these emotions and embrace them are the ones that you know, get further, shall we say. If you're using football, they're the ones that maybe get further or play at a higher standard or become better players, because it's not always about how good you are at football. You know, you can be brilliant at football, but if you don't have the tools, you know, upstairs, for want of a better term, to manage what you can do with your feet, then you're not going to get anywhere, are you? You know, and that's where it goes back to my first point about the sport, you know, working on players' mental health, working on psychological strengths and building them up mentally as much as they build them up physically when they're doing strength training and such like. Are there any quick wins that coaches or parents could implement to boost player confidence?
Yeah. I think, you know, we've got to be careful to make mental training things sound easy, but there are simple things that parents can do to kind of assist that process. First one, I think, is, you know, the biggest source of confidence that we have as people is what we've accomplished and successes that we have. And when we're in that kind of low confidence state, it's very easy to lean towards all the negatives and all the things we haven't achieved, all the things we've perceived we've failed on, especially at a young age. And so I think parents can assist that just by balancing the books a bit, you know, emphasize what your child's accomplished, what have they done well that week as well, rather than just focusing on all the negatives of what they felt they did wrong in the game. You know, you can support that as well by, just where possible, obviously where there's permission, by videotaping things that they do well. You know, if you maybe watch them play in the garden, for example, or whatever, you know, recording little accomplishments that they make and just balancing that perspective of themselves a bit. Obviously it's got to be realistic. If they have had a shocker and they know they've had a shocker and they walk off and you go, oh, you're amazing today, they're not going to see that as a building that as a source of confidence for themselves. But that's where even you can also bring in kind of success stories of other people that are similar to them. You know, look at this, Joe, you know, Trent, when he was your age, he went through this and he found it a really positive experience, or he was successful after it. You know, bringing their role models, I think that's really, really, really effective, because they idolize them so much, and if they see that these superheroes actually went through the same thing as they did, the same injury and overcame it or something like that, it's really powerful, and they can see that, oh, okay, you know, I've got a bit more confidence now that I can do that as well. And it could even be a friend of theirs, you know, if their friend tore their hamstring and then they've just torn their hamstring, look at how Michael came through his hamstring tear and came back, you can do it too. So little things like that, emphasizing those strengths and those successes. Again, going back to another simple thing, just normalizing those experiences, those emotions. We already touched on that. But it's such a simple thing to do that maybe isn't done enough. And then I would say as well, kind of checking in with what their expectations are of themselves. So with confidence, this is especially true when it maybe looks to parents on the sideline and the coach as though they have played well. Maybe they've scored two goals, but they're trudging off the pitch saying, I didn't play well there. I didn't play well enough. And you're thinking, well, wait, you just scored two goals. What's the problem? But in their head, if they're thinking, I should have scored three, or I should have won every header and I only won, you know, 85% of them, they're not accessing that source of confidence in terms of being successful. Yeah. You know, if they perceive that missing one chance is a failure, then they're never going to feel the confidence from getting that sense of success and achievement. So, you know, it can be helpful to kind of gently reframe those expectations. You know, I understand why you want to score every chance, but, you know, does Haaland score every chance? Or does he score a hat-trick every game? No. And then it's just kind of giving them that more realistic view of what's achievable. And then when they do score two goals, maybe they can see it more as a success.
That's what I say to my son. You know, I'll say, you know, does Haaland score with every shot?
Yeah.
Does, you know, no. And I ask him the question and I don't say anything until he's answered. Not putting pressure on him. I need him to answer the question, but it to stick on him. And I have to, you know, my son's the type of player where he needs encouragement all the time, you know, an arm around him. I was very much, I needed someone to kick me up arse and say, you know, maybe, you know, shout a few expletives at me and tell me I'm crap, that had got me going. I said, I'm, you know, my son's the opposite. He needs that, you know, and he'll say to me, no, he doesn't. I say, so why do you think you need to? It's unrealistic for anyone to score every chance or win every tackle or put every cross in or every, you know, it is unrealistic. So you try and look at the things that you've done well instead of dwelling on the things that you didn't do. And he's sort of one of them players that if he misses a chance, he then starts getting a bit frustrated and he'll start snatching and it gets worse and it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy then in each game. And one of the things I've spoke to him about is just doing breathing exercise. So big thing I'm about is box breathing. Yeah. And I said, look, you can do the box breathing in the middle of a game. So if you find yourself getting a bit hit up, a bit stressed, a bit anxious, a bit tense, just use the box breathing exercises. No one knows you're doing it because no one can see. And you can be while you're walking back, while you're getting in position. If you do these box breathing exercises, I guarantee you, Jude, it will bring you down. It'll enable you to start thinking more positively and more straight. And he's done that. And he said to me, yeah, it really works that. You know, could you give us some tips around breathing and why it's so important then?
Yeah, I think the thing with breathing for me is that it grounds you, the player or whoever's doing it, back into the present. And ultimately that's, you know, you can't play football in the past, you can't play football in the future, you can only play in the present.
Yeah.
And breathing is great for just grounding us in that present moment. And I think that's the most important thing. It all links really back to focus there. You know, breathing, obviously it's got kind of relaxing effects as well, and kind of combats that anxiety and stress that they may be feeling a bit, and just brings them back to a level where they can focus and think, okay, this has happened, but what do I need to do now at this moment in the game, or even if it's outside the game, what do I need to do now to do the best for myself and do something beneficial for me rather than dwelling on the past or the future? Because ultimately we know that even though we feel like we're working something out in our head when we're worrying about it and things like that, it tends never to be the case. We just go around in circles. And so, yeah, any type of breathing exercise I think is really great for that. There's little thought management exercises as well that we can use to separate ourselves from thoughts we're having that are kind of ruling over our, dominating our mind. So in the match, we can kind of just say, thanks, mind, but I'm going to focus on whatever it is that is their responsibility in the game. And it's just a quick little tools that you can kind of just create separation from that thought. We're not getting rid of the thought. You know, it's fine that it's there. It's going to be there. You just made a mistake, but it's about creating that separation to then be able to focus on what's important, because ultimately if we just focus in on that thought and that mistake, it's going to lead to more mistakes later on. And then that obviously has a collateral effect on well-being after the game and how they feel. So for me, it's those little quick tools that are actionable that can be really effective, and parents can learn them. And that's what I cover a lot in my content. I try and take the kind of, not the boring stuff, but the theory and the research and make it more accessible and actionable and relatable. For parents to kind of pluck out and just say, okay, that's something that I could actually do, you know, with my child. That's something I could teach them. It's not too complex. You know, and obviously the more complex stuff is where you kind of sports psychologist might come in. But yeah, I try and make it, you know, distribute some little actionable tips like that just to help out. As you say, in that car journey, if you go, you try this next time.
I think, you see, I totally agree what you're saying there, because if a coach or a parent, caregiver doesn't understand the technique and what it does, they can't explain it to the player, can they?
Yeah.
So they need educating around, you know, mental health and how it affects positively and negatively football. I think, you know, what you said then as well about, you can't play football in the past and you can't play football in the present. You can only play football in the future. I guess a metaphor for life, isn't it? You know, it is. That is life. And I think a lot of us do, you know, live our lives in the past and the future. And instead of being in the present, I'm a classic example. All I'm doing is always looking forward at where I'm going to the point that I've blocked stuff out in the past that I've done well and also that hasn't gone well. And that I know does hold me back sometimes, because I'm I'm always looking 6, 12, 18 months in the future. And I think what's in the past, forget it. But things in the past, when you, you know, unpack them, do help, don't they? And I unpack them and then I just chuck them away. And I leave the husks of negativity I get rid of, but also the husks of positivity as well. I also, they all go in the same bin. So well, I get what you're saying.
That's another thing that's just prompted me there, that parents can easily bring in with their kids, just journaling.
Yeah.
Just, you know, buy a little journal, you know, writing down different feelings that they're experiencing, different things they've done well that week, strengths, getting that, just getting it all down on paper. You know, what am I experiencing? When is it? When am I feeling that way? What's causing it? You know, what's coming before that? You know, what have I done well this week? What are my strengths and successes that I've done? Just journal little things. What do I want to achieve? Little goals. You know, journaling, so simple, and yet no one really does it. It's not the most exciting activity to do. No. You know, I'm sure they'd rather be on Xbox, but it only takes 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it can make a big difference. And as you say, you don't. It's recorded. It's not in the past in your mind. It's in the past in the journal, and you can more easily go back to it rather than racking your brain when it's all overwhelmed.
Well, we funnily enough, we have created match day journals in the vault.
Brilliant.
And what that is it's a simple. It's for junior footballers. And it asks them, to record the date, the opposition and the score. And then it asks them 4 or 5 simple questions. How did I feel before the game? How did I feel after the game? What coach said I did well? What I think I did well? What I'm going to work on for next week? And just as you've said there, Ross, this journaling is allowing them to be mindful, but if you like, subconsciously through football. So at the start, they're probably not realising they're being mindful. You ask a lot of adults what mindfulness is, they won't understand it. Never mind a kid. Exactly. So we're allowing them to be mindful through football. And it's then giving them the tools to then, because it's recorded, they can look back. So, for example, I know my son would say, oh, I remember when we played Kirk Burton away, Dad, we won 2-1, I assisted Jax. And he'll be going back looking for the results. But then I'd say to him, well, how did you feel before the game, Jude? Well, I felt a bit nervous because they're a big team and they're quite aggressive and we've always lost to them. How did you feel after? I felt great because I really got stuck in. I won my battles. I worked hard. I assisted Jax. You know, and by doing that weekly, and everyone, I think I said to everyone I study that's successful, the journal, they express gratitude, they look after themselves and they have goals. And although it's really, really, really easy to do that, it's actually very difficult to get into that habit because it's not initially quite, you know, like I say, as a young person, you get probably a better dopamine hit off, you know, Fortnite on the Xbox or PlayStation and talking with your mates, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's journaling is one of the easiest things to do. And it just allows you to know where you are, doesn't it, if you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's something that's really key as well when working with athletes and parents. You know, how can we, you know, obviously I teach certain tools in sessions and things, but actually outside of sessions, am I supporting that child or that parent to implement that into their busy schedule? Because it's very easy to be forgotten about. So, you know, do you have 5 minutes when you wake up? Do you have 5 minutes before bed to just practice that, you know, or in the car on the way there, or using, say, the warm up for the game as a chance to just practice it while you're moving and while you're focusing on something. And again, yeah, it's that kind of support as well that I think is key in making it a habit. And that's the difference between, you know, being able doing the work and then you know 6 weeks later you've kind of forgotten about it and actually doing it and making it part of your day-to-day life.
Habits. So what are some practical takeaways that coaches, parents and players can start implementing immediately to improve mental health?
I think I go back again to normalizing it. I just think it's so vital at a young age. When you don't understand the emotions you're experiencing, many of which you're experiencing for the first time, and just knowing that it is okay. There's other people that have gone through the same thing. They're older than you that succeeded. You're going through a completely normal experience. It's okay to feel that way, and it's all part of what you're doing. That understanding and reminding yourself of that is a big thing. There's obviously as well self-care, engaging in self-care, especially for parents and coaches who are often busy or very busy. Making that time for yourself to do something that you find relaxing or enjoyable in your day. Mm-hmm. Taking breaks where you need to, you know, if it is getting a lot. And just, yeah, taking a step back and going, okay, what's good for me? Because ultimately, if you're struggling with your mental health, it's likely that you're not delivering what you want to the the players and the kids. So that's really key. And then for the players as well, and for parents can assist with this, you know, are you still enjoying football? Are you actually enjoying this at the minute? Are you enjoying this level you're playing at? Maybe they've stepped up a level. Are you enjoying it? If it's not their aspiration to pursue a career in football, then, and you're not enjoying it, you don't need to stay in that situation. It might be actually beneficial for their mental health to change that environment. And that might mean changing teams. It might mean stepping down a level.
Yeah.
It might mean changing to a different sport. But if you're not on that journey whereby, you know, you're going through the challenges of, say, academy football, and it might not be enjoyable all the time, but you've got that drive and that goal to keep going, you know, it can be useful to just assess that enjoyment sometimes and go, okay, if you're not enjoying this and we're not taking this long term, what can we change about this situation that might make you happier in it while still playing football or playing sport, whatever it might be?
Excellent. Well, Ross, thanks so much. There's loads there, you know, for myself as a coach and myself as a parent and everyone else listening to take away from that. Really, really appreciate it. And I think, if you could, going to put you on spot now, could you surmise the link between success in football and mental health?
Oof. Tough one.
Drop that on you then, didn't I?
I think, you know, if you perceive that you've been successful in whatever, football being the example here, football is likely the most significant or meaningful thing to that person. If they perceive that they've been successful in that pursuit in their life, and that player feels that they're improving and they're bettering themselves, I think that it's proven to be beneficial for confidence, self-esteem. There may still be kind of anxiety there, but generally when we experience that success and those positive experience, we were able to manage it a lot more. Our motivation's better when we're succeeding because we're seeing the results of that commitment. And I think, yeah, it just kind of feeds in to all that good stuff, focus, motivation, confidence. You know, the adversities seem worth it when we're succeeding. And so that process of overcoming them again is a bit easier. And so I think that's the link. Yeah, it feeds into those positive psychological experiences, whereby, you know, we feel like we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And so our mental health benefits because we're living the way we want to live.
Okay. So again, another one here, because you just, as you've said that, something else has come to me. On the flip side then, when things aren't going so well, because when things are going well, you know, the hurdles still come at you, but they seem easy to jump over, don't they? Because you're running quicker, you've got your stride. When things are going so well, they seem to come quicker and they seem to be higher, don't they, metaphorically? Yeah. So when things aren't going so well and the hurdles are coming at you quicker and they're a bit higher than what they used to be, could you give us some tips around, could you talk about very briefly about visualization then and how that can help in a football sense to maybe help overcome these hurdles as they're coming at you?
Yeah, so imagery is, you know, is just one technique that, you know, we might use to train imagery. It can be useful to kind of, especially if you're anticipating it's going to be quite a stressful or pressurizing situation, it can be useful to kind of immerse yourself in that experience in your own mind, trying to incorporate as many elements of the actual experience as possible. So you may actually physically go to the pitch that you're going to play on.
Yes.
You might go in your boots and shin pads, even though there's no one around but people walking the dogs. You know, recreate that, will be in the environment. Try and consider the emotions you might be feeling, or tell your child to do this. you know, imagine performing at the speed you're going to be moving at that point. It's just trying to recreate as much of the experience as possible, and the idea being that we can essentially feel it before we feel it. And you can also do it to improve kind of skills and technique as well, but that's another whole other issue. But yeah, the idea being that we're preparing for that adversity in our mind before we experience it real life, and we've almost acclimatized to it in our head, and we've thought about some aspects of it so we know what to expect. The flip side being that if something comes along that we don't expect, are we then thinking about oh god I didn't image this, and now it's happening? But again, that's where that kind of thought management comes in, and being able to refocus on that present moment, that's really important.
I think what I've always done is I'm not saying this would work for anyone else, but it does for me. I always bring into my head the worst possible scenario, because if I'm prepared for that, anything else is a bonus. And I think if I can handle the worst possible scenario in my head at whatever I'm doing, if I'm ready for that, the likelihood of the worst possible scenario happening is very, very slim, because fear is like, well, what do you think? What's going to happen? Oh, it's this. That's never going to happen. So if I prepare myself for the worst thing, any step up from that or above, I'm gravy. Yeah. You know, I'm up for it. So
that's how
I deal with it.
Yeah, and that's a good way to, I guess, combat that element of something unexpected happening. Because, you know, if you feel like you have thought of the worst case scenario, then even if that unexpected event happens, you consider something similar or of similar significance to you.
Yeah, it works for me, but I'm not saying it works for everyone. So Ross, thanks so much. I could have really listened to you all day and kept asking you questions, but I know we can't do that. So really, really, really appreciate it, Ross. Just remind us where we can find you, name your company and your website, please.
So yeah, my company is Challenger Mindset. Website's www.challenger-mindset.com. I've recently released a new program called the Kickstart Mindset Training Program, which is specifically for your youth footballers and aspiring young footballers, where we work on essentially becoming just kind of developing that courage, focusing on what they can control. And also, I've lost the second or third C, coping. Developing those skills to be able to cope with the setbacks and the challenges of being an aspiring young footballer, with the aim of kind of helping players thrive, be able to respond to setbacks, developing that resilience that we've spoken about, and focusing on those actions that can help them close that gap between what they produce on the pitch and what their true potential is. Instagram and social media, you can find me at challenger_mindset on Instagram. I also have a Facebook page. If you just type in Challenger Mindset, it should come up. And then Twitter, I am @CH_mindset.
Brilliant. Well, I'll put all the links on the vault and on the podcast. Brilliant. And I was going to say to you, let's do that again, Ross, that final bit. But I thought, no, because we've been talking about that it's okay to make mistakes. It's no big deal and we all do them. So I thought, you know, if I went, oh, Ross, we'll cut that and do it right. No, you know, life is making mistakes and this is on the fly and we're all going to make them, aren't we? So thanks for that, Ross. And thanks for that little lesson at the end. I really appreciate it, mate.
No worries. Ross, thank you. Thanks
Ross
for having
Preston,
me on.
Challenger Mindset. Thanks so much. Thanks a lot, bud.
Thanks, Danny.
Thanks, mate.